This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing, and thanks to Julie Baxter, who did fine work yesterday in my absence, and it's nice to be back with you. If you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757 is your number. Locally, the number in Baton Rouge is 297-5633. You can always send us an email at talk@talklouisiana.org. Later, we're going to hear from Dr. Peter Kaczmarzyk of the Pennington Center about major study regarding youth in Baton Rouge. And we'll also talk with Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief of the Advocate, about various and sundry things. There's a whole lot going on in state government and beyond. But we begin with Peter Olson. He's the Executive Director of the Knock Knock Children's Museum, which opened to the world on August 22nd. City Brooks Park, it's right on the hill, beautiful facility. And 60,000 people have visited since the Children's Museum opened. And if you drive by there, you can see this is an amazing facility, 26,000 square feet. And it was done for an economical price by today's standards, $14 million. Compare that with the $85 million it took to spruce up the rec center at LSU, $14 million. And this is really a cutting-edge facility, not only for this community where we are, but for the country at large. Peter, you're all smiles right now.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, you've been involved in different kinds of projects like this. So you were director of exhibits for the Minnesota Children's Museum in St. Paul, and also the founding executive director of the award-winning Children's Museum of Southern Minnesota in Mankato. How does this one compare with the facilities in your home state?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. I think Knock Knock Children's Museum is really noted for its sense of place, its location in City Brooks Park with the soaring views of the LSU Lakes. And when you're in the building, it almost feels like you're in a cathedral for play. It's got these big, tall ceilings and these beautiful views from these massive beacon windows. And I think that really sets it apart from other children's museums.
I mentioned 60,000 people have been there in the first 2 months. Was that what you anticipated, or is it better?
It's better. It's better.
So what's the draw?
Well, I think the trick to it is irresistible to children. If you're under 10 years old or so, you just got to be there. You'd rather be there than anywhere else. It's a place that'll make you put down the iPad and put down the smartphone and just old-fashioned play. And then at the same time, it's parent-approved. As a parent, it's really tough to make a bad choice when you're there. All the choices are good for your children. So the combination of the both attributes make it just a really popular place to be.
All right. It's on 6 acres of existing parkland, providing access to all communities within Baton Rouge. And a listener asks about the cost of admission.
Yeah, it is $14 for anybody over the age of one. Infants, it's for free. We have family memberships. If you live in the Capital Region, that's really the way to go. For $150, a family of four can visit as many times as you want throughout the year. And then we also have a Museums for All program that we call Knock Knock for All Access. And with that, if you present an EBT card or a Louisiana Purchase card, up to six people in your family can get in for $3 each.
Well, I know some people, when it was on the drawing board, thought, you know, this location's kind of iffy. It's by City Park. But it's so far looking like it was a stroke of genius.
I think so. It's not without its challenges. Parking is an issue, but BREC is such a good partner. Knock Knock is a separate 501c3 private nonprofit, but it's located in BREC City Brooks Park, and they're doing all they can to add more parking. If you see, there's some construction going on the site right now. But I would say the benefits of the site far outweigh any negatives. Once you're there, it is just a really great place to be.
What are some of the exhibits that are drawing the most attention?
Well, there's, of course, the Storybook Climber. It's about a 45-foot climbing structure that's also this beautiful work of art. It looks like flying books, and children get to scale it from the bottom of the museum all the way up to the top. Our go-go garage is one of the first learning zones you encounter, and children will get sucked into changing tires on a car and spend 40 minutes changing tires. I'd also say our crybaby exhibit is really unique. This is something that sets us apart, too, is that it's just for babies, ones and twos, and it's set in a Louisiana bayou sort of environment. Children can become a crawfish. Yeah. They can noodle for catfish. They can get in a boat, and it's just for the little ones. So that's right. if you got a little kid, it's a pretty cool place to be.
All right, well, got a bit more time with Peter Olson, the executive director of the Knock Knock Children's Museum, which opened to the world on August 22nd of this year. So we're just a few months removed from the opening, about three, and 60,000 people have already been there. Allie Baltazar, our producer, says, can she go if she doesn't have kids? Is it okay to for an adult to walk in, or are they going to look like they're out of their tree?
Well, we always encourage people to borrow a child, somebody they know, and come in, because it's just so fun to watch the child take the lead and know just what to do in there. But we do allow grown-ups in there. We have a specific safety protocol to make sure that unaccompanied grown-ups are checked in, and we know they're there, and they're there for the right reasons. A grown-up can come by on their own.
All right. I know that Governor Edwards was one of the first visitors, along with the First Lady.
Yes.
And a listener notes that the former mayor president, Kip Holden, he actually donated some of his own money, didn't he?
Yes, he did. That was before my time, but that's kind of legend in the story of Knock Knock at this point.
So he was a big part of believing in this project, and so far, so good. Recently, I understand you had like a pie-throwing thing in there. What was going on?
Well, you know, it was Giving Tuesday on Tuesday, and, you know, it's a great thing across the country, but there's a bit of fatigue around it, so we wanted to demonstrate how fun giving could be to try to do something different. So we had a group of, I don't know, there's probably 12, 13, 14 of us who each raised over $1,000, and then we took a pie to the face and broadcast it live on Facebook. And the children got to slam the pies in our face. And they it's a little disturbing how much they enjoyed doing that, but it was a good time had by all.
Nobody got hurt.
Nobody got hurt, but I swallowed a few sprinkles, and they aren't as tasty as they look.
How does this museum compare with others of its kind?
Yeah, I think it's... it's a medium-sized children's museum across the country, but in Louisiana, it's currently the largest. Since we're brand new, all of our learning zones are really cutting edge. It's some of the best that you'll find across the country. But its sense of place in City Brooks Park, those views, the soaring ceilings, it really is a special place to be, and more so than other children's museums, I'd have to say.
Well, I know you have a lot of that... experience that a kid has that you're focusing upon, including early literacy skills. How are you addressing that?
Yeah, there's when you walk into the place, and when you walk into the first level gallery, there's this giant story tree where it's a tree, fanciful tree with letters and books and words and little critters hanging in the canopy of the tree. And it's all about inspiring a love of books. And the tree is surrounded by books. Yeah. You can even go in the trunk of the tree, find a secret door, go inside the trunk of the tree, and view animation through a periscope, circling around the canopy, and find all these critters and words and letters. And the point is to really inspire that love of books, that love of reading from the youngest age.
STEAM. Mm-hmm. That means science, technology, engineering, art, and math. You're addressing those areas as well?
Yes, sir. So we have an art garden, and we have a maker shop, and they're right next door to each other. So in the art garden, as you can imagine, it's full of paint and drawing and sculpture and all this media, and loving adults who mentor children in the creative arts. And right next door, we have this place where you can tinker. It's kind of like your dad's garage or your grandpa's workshop, and you explore circuits and robotics and simple tools to complex tools. And it's just all about getting hands-on and figuring out how stuff works.
As far as your hours, a few listeners want to know when they can come. You're open how many days a week?
We're open 6 days a week. We're closed Mondays. Unless it's a school holiday, then we're usually open on Monday. All our hours are on our website, We're open late on Thursdays till 7 p.m., otherwise
tonight,
till 5.
7 o'clock tonight, you can make it.
Yes, sir.
At 5 o'clock on other days.
That is correct.
And you generally open when?
We open at 10 a.m. on Sundays. We open Saturdays we open at 9 a.m., Sundays at 11 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
and on Wednesdays we have a special members-only hour from 9 to 10 a.m.
Well, it's a shiny new thing right now, and it is beautiful when you see it from the interstate or you're driving down Dalrymple Drive, but you think it's going to have the staying power that's necessary to keep it going for a long, long time?
As long as the people of Baton Rouge and the Capital Region keep giving it their attention and love and the support, we'll keep it going and keep it beautiful.
All right. Well, thanks for coming this way from Minnesota to run the Knock Knock Children's Museum. Peter Olson, the executive director. First of a few visits, I hope, for us on this show.
I hope so. Thank you.
And we'll be back with another Peter, Dr. Peter Kaczmarzyk of the Pennington Center, after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757 is your number for Talk Louisiana. And if you're dialing locally in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Dr. Peter Kaczmarzyk is with us from the Pennington Biomedical Research Center. He's been there a decade. Came this way from Canada, and he presented new research just a few days ago at an obesity conference at the Pennington Biomedical Research Center. And he is with us, as always, to provide some insightful information about what's going on with particularly young people. Your latest research, the findings are somewhat challenging, aren't they?
Yes, sir. We conducted a study in Baton Rouge kids, trying to look at their overall activity profiles. You know, there's been a real focus over time on just getting kids active, you know, 60 minutes a day or so. We've tended to kind of forget about the rest of the day, you know, the rest of the 24 hours. So we were trying to look at the activity profiles over a 24-hour period in these kids.
Well, you looked at things like sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Are kids getting enough sleep?
They're not doing too bad on sleep. In terms of the duration, you know, they're getting 9 to 10 mm-hmm. hours of sleep a day, which is good.
Right. Well, yeah.
But it's more around the timing of it and disruptions. You know, that tends to disrupt their sleep.
You also examine something called screen time. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, we're faced with screens all day now, every day. Typically, we've looked at television viewing as a marker of sedentary behavior, and we understand that that's also causing health problems in the kids.
What about phones and things like that?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like people are tethered to their devices, and that's probably not a good thing as far as getting out and being vigorous with exercise and developing good habits as far as our health.
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't have a lot of good data on other types of screens like telephones and iPads and those sorts of things. We're beginning to understand more about that and the connection with sleep as well. You know, this is disrupting the children's sleep behavior, the exposure to light in the bedroom. All of these sorts of things interact in their health.
Well, these areas that you're looking at makes you take a different perspective, I would think, at some of the other things you look at, like body mass index and mm-hmm. body fat. What did you find along those lines?
Well, essentially, the more components of the 24-hour profile that the children met in terms of a health perspective, you know, if they met the screen time guidelines, if they met the physical activity guidelines, if they met their sleep guidelines, they had a lower odds of being obese. And it was kind of cumulative. So the more components they met, the healthier they were.
And these were like 10-year-olds, right?
This particular study was from 5 to 18 years of age. So it was a nice cross-section.
So you had a pretty good cross-section.
Yeah.
But only 10% of children in a recent study trial of over 350 children mm-hmm. in the Baton Rouge area met the recommended guidelines for sleep, screen time, and vigorous activity.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a project from Dr. Peter Kaczmarzyk from Pennington Biomedical Research Center. If you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757. Now, the kids are having issues with obesity, but so are the grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
So if a person is not in good shape, is he or she more likely to have a kid who's not in the best of shape?
Sure. We find these things tend to run in families. There is a genetic component, but also the shared environment. You know, we all live in the same environment in our family, And so that also contributes to establishing healthy lifestyles or unhealthy lifestyles, as the case may be.
Well, I notice one of the things about 10-year-olds, you say that 40 to 45% of 10-year-olds, Dr. Katz-Marzik, only receive 2 days of physical education classes per week, and very few walk or bike to school, less mm-hmm. than 10%. So with that as the backdrop, is it any surprise that we have some of the issues that you've been talking about for a decade now?
I don't think so. As you mentioned, less than 10% of kids are walking or cycling to school nowadays. About 60% are being driven in mm-hmm. a car. Another 30% are on the bus.
So, do we have more of an issue in Louisiana than in other places regarding childhood obesity and adult obesity?
Yeah, we sure do. You know, we talk about these rank orders and these lists, you know, the report cards and all that. We don't fare too well on that. In both childhood and adult obesity, we're always in the top five in terms of the states.
Top five.
Mm-hmm.
And the others who are in the top five, are they from the South, or is it any region that is more prominent than others?
Yeah, it certainly is the Southern region. You could call it the obesity belt or the diabetes belt, stroke belt, cardiovascular disease belt, but we are firmly in that right in Louisiana.
And why?
Well, you know, that's a big question. We have sociologists working on the problem. We have biologists, molecular biologists, trying to determine, you know, what is it about the South, what is it about this region, which drives up the rates of obesity and diabetes. No one really knows.
It would seem that the weather here is probably more conducive to physical activity than it is in mm-hmm. your native country of Canada, but yet Canadians don't have the same kinds of issues on the whole that we have in Louisiana, do they?
No. Climate does play a role. You could almost think of it as a reverse situation here, though. We do not have a temperate climate here in Louisiana. It's more of subtropical. And we all know getting out in July and August and trying to exercise in Louisiana is a tough chore.
It doesn't take long to loosen up, though.
No, that's true.
So some would say that's the best time to exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like getting out in 10-degree weather, which you have to do in some of these other places.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, we've got a real issue here. And is there anything that's going to be the turning point? Is there going to be a catalyst for getting us to be fit again?
Well, you know, we hope so. We're part of these international initiatives. There's a global alliance on physical mm-hmm. activity for children. We're part of 51 different countries who are tackling this issue. We're developing report cards to try to power this movement to get children more active.
All right. Well, a listener notes that some politicians talk about making America great again, but rarely does a politician of any stripe talk about making America fit again, and the two may be hand in glove.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If we want to be a great country, we need to get back to where we were. We didn't have these problems in the 1960s, mm-hmm. did we?
No, we didn't. And, you know, now the military is even coming out. They have an interesting infographic on the Internet now. It's called Unfit to Serve.
Yeah, they've got a real issue getting qualified people.
Absolutely.
And they've had to lower their standards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm told the Marines now only require 3 pull-ups. Three.
Mm.
Three.
I might even be able to make that. I don't know.
Well, 877-217-5757 is your number if you'd like to join Dr. Peter Katz-Marzik from the Pennington Biomedical Research Center. He's out with a fresh report about obesity and how it's affecting us in Louisiana. He surveyed 350 children in the Baton Rouge area, ages 5 to 18. What about these other numbers, like blood glucose levels, which, of course, is the reading for diabetes, triglycerides? Are those off the chart as well?
Yeah, they tend to follow hand in hand with the obesity rates, and we certainly have problems there as well. So, you know, all this translates into, you know, once we get into adulthood, Louisiana has the highest diabetes-related complication rate in the country. And diabetes-related deaths, you know, we far outpace
the highest.
The highest.
The highest.
Highest in the country.
And obesity also is a factor in strokes,
mm-hmm.
Heart disease, you name it. Anything that is bad can happen as a result of carrying too much girth that mm-hmm. is not good for us.
Absolutely.
So does it start in childhood? or in some cases, do people who are fit at 18 suddenly become unfit at 38? When does it generally start?
You know, we see it starting earlier and earlier. You know, we even believe it starts, you know, before we're born. You know, it's patterns in the mother and their ability to be physically active. And this translates into a healthy baby in terms of blood glucose and body size. And so, you know, you can't start too early. We're focusing now on what we call the early years. These are preschoolers and toddlers. This is where we establish our lifestyle behaviors.
We're visiting with Dr. Peter Kaczmarzyk from the Pennington Biomedical Research Center. We're going to talk some more with him. If you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757 or 297-5633. We'll also hear from Mark Ballard of The Advocate. We'll talk about various and sundry things happening in our world. But we're back after this pause for the news on 89.3 WRKF with Karen Henderson. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. 877-217-5757 is your number. 297-5633 in Baton Rouge and talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. Dr. Peter Kaczmarzyk is with us for a little while longer. 10 years at Pennington Biomedical Research Center. He's from Canada, and he notes that our region in this state, Louisiana, has a real problem with people who are not in good physical condition, and obesity is a huge issue, and the Pennington Biomedical Research Center is one of those entities that has been addressing this for some time. And there's a new study regarding children that shows that it's an alarming condition that we have right now. If you'd like to comment, again, 877-217-5757. Richard in Lafayette. Richard, you're on with Dr. Kaczmarzyk. Hi, Richard.
Hello. Hey, thank you for taking my call. My question is this. This is a problem that I've heard addressed for many, many, many years. And it seems to me that the schools have an obligation, the school boards have an obligation to address this issue in the form of education, in the form of a curriculum that addresses physical fitness. What's being done in that area, or does anybody know what's being done in that area in order to address this problem? And I'll get off the phone
right,
for that.
Thank you. Dr. Kaczmarzyk, do the schools have an obligation to get kids in good condition?
That is a good question. I think we all have an obligation as teachers, as parents, as legislators to make healthy environments for our children. You know, schools, though, are really tasked with education, first and foremost. You know, when you start talking to schools about improving health of children, you've got to make the link to academics. And we have to, you know, make the link that physically active children actually do better in school. They're more attentive. And they end up with better outcomes.
And once again, this study by the Pennington Center found that only 40% of 10-year-olds receive 2 days of physical education classes per week, and fewer than 10% actually walk or bike to school. 877-217-5757. Still time to get in with Dr. Kaczmarzyk from the Pennington Biomedical Research Center. Ray in Prairieville. Hi, Ray. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Thanks for taking my call, Jim. I always enjoy your program.
Thank you.
Question for Dr. Kaczmarzyk. What effect does he feel that our diet here in Louisiana, in fact, in the United States, that seems to be way too high in sugar and refined flour and that type of thing?
Well, is that a big contributor?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, we talk about obesity, it's all about energy balance. Mm-hmm. So we have energy in and energy out. Now, that sounds simple. All the scientists around the world can agree on that. That's something we agree on. It's energy balance. However, when you start breaking it down and looking at all the contributors to energy balance, it gets extremely complicated.
Is any sugar acceptable?
Any sugar?
Yeah.
Well, I think in moderation.
In moderation.
Yes, sir.
I remember Jack LaLanne was on this show every year on his birthday of September 26th until he died at 96. But he said, no sugar tonight, no sugar today. Mm. He said the only thing good about a donut is the hole in the middle. 877-217-5757. Iris on Segan Lane. Hi, Iris. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, Jim. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to bring out that sometimes I think it has to do with the culture. I'm 40-something years old now, but when I was a kid, my grandmother always said, eat everything on your plate because there are starving children in Africa. Well, part of my problem is always been portion control, because I equate leaving things on your plate with wasting money. And I just wanted to bring out that part. It rings in my head every time I don't make a smiling face plate. I think about my grandmother saying, you're wasting money. There's starving kids in Africa.
All right. Thank you. I think that's true, that many of us were told to clean our plates, and we still do. And at a certain age, if we eat the same amount, if I ate the same amount I ate when I was 13 years old, I'd be 300 pounds. You have to make adjustments at some point. So, Dr. Kaczmarzyk, you're nodding your head. Mm-hmm. You're 49 years old. What do you do to stay in shape?
Well, you know, it's tough in my profession. You know, we all have sedentary professions these days, right?
Yeah.
So we're sitting here today on the radio. We're both sitting. I sit at my office writing grants and scientific papers all day. So what I try to do is break up that sedentary behavior the best way I can.
How much is necessary? 30 minutes, an hour?
In adults, we go for at least 30 minutes a day of moderate to vigorous activity. And that really doesn't take a lot of effort.
No. It can mean a walk.
Yep. It can mean a brisk walk. It could mean a round of tennis, anything like that, just kind of getting up and moving. We're starting to learn, too, a little bit about the benefits of light activity. So just getting out of your desk and walking around, instead of sending mm-hmm. an email to the office next door, get up and go talk to the person.
Mm-hmm. I used to stand when I would do mm-hmm. this show. I don't do that anymore. Maybe I should start it, but I usually have so many papers I get lost in the shuffle if I'm standing and trying to talk yeah. and read and all this mm-hmm. stuff. But any kind of activity is better than sitting. Sitting is yeah. just not good. Not good.
No, we when you sit, you shut off the major muscles in your body. The major skeletal muscles are in your legs. You shut them down, you've shut off their metabolism.
877-217-5757 for Dr. Peter Kaczmarzyk of the Pennington Biomedical Research Center. Here's an expansion of something we've already talked about from Jasmine asking, is there a correlation between our lack of poor education or our lack of education and bad health in our state? Does one lead to the other?
Well, in the United States, it certainly does. We have a gradient, you know, of socioeconomic status and education, where, you know, people with lower socioeconomic status tend to have higher rates of obesity in this country. That isn't everywhere in the world, though. In developing countries, it's actually the reverse. So the higher education, the higher SES, they have higher problems with obesity.
Really?
Yep.
And why is that?
Well, it's called the epidemiologic transition. You know, as you move from an economy and an environment that is high in infectious disease and mm-hmm. You're transitioning into one like in the United States and Canada and Australia, where we're faced with chronic diseases. You know, there's that shift.
Well, and also, there's a fast food mm-hmm. restaurant on every block in our country. That's yeah. really not a good way to stay fit, is it?
No. You go to other countries, and you can rarely find these restaurants.
877-217-5757 for Dr. Kaczmarzyk of the Pennington Biomedical Research Center. Joanne in Lafayette. Hi, Joanne. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, good morning. I'm not sure if you guys had touched on this already. I had to get out of my car and come into work. But in regards to the sort of obesity in Louisiana, I'm not originally from here. I'm from Colorado. And I think it's more of definitely a socioeconomical thing. And the reality is that a bundle of apples is $5, and a meal at a fast restaurant is $5. And which one are you going to choose if you need to eat? So I'm not sure if that was brought up, but I think coming from, you know, a really good area where we exercise and we're out in the environment, and then coming here where nobody's outside, everybody's eating boxed meals, and then couple that with, you know, lower economics, they can't afford good food.
Mm-hmm. It's a good point. Sometimes it costs more to eat well.
Mm-hmm. It can be done, though. We try to educate people at Pennington about the economics of food. And, you know, if you were to actually take a family of four to one of these fast food restaurants and buy, you know, four combination meals, and you add that up, we can show people how to eat a lot healthier at a grocery store for less money.
And we're creatures of habit. The the smells that come from those restaurants sometimes are intoxicating. If you go in there, you probably want to come back. You might want to come back later in the day. You might want to come back three times a day. And if you do that, there's probably going to be an issue down the line. 877-217-5757. Kevin on O'Neill Lane. Hi, Kevin. You're on Talk Louisiana with Dr. Peter Kaczmarczyk of the Pennington Center.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I was just curious, has anyone ever considered the impacts of social welfare and obesity as it relates to, like, you know, food assistance programs? And that's, I was just kind of curious about that. It just seems to be my observation.
All right. Dr. Kaczmarczyk?
Well, you know, it's kind of a peculiar situation when you think about food insecurity. So these are people that don't really know where their next meal is coming from. They have a hard time getting healthy food into the home. And that is actually associated with obesity, if you can believe that. So it's a situation that we're trying to understand. We have some sociologists that are now trying to understand the link between food insecurity and obesity.
Well, we have fewer people smoking, which is good, but we have more heavy people. And in the 1960s, we had a lot of people smoking, but the average male weighed less than the average female does today in the United States in the 1960s. So have we traded one problem for another?
Well, it seems that way in the media, at least. They always talk about the new smoking. So, you know, obesity was the new smoking at one point. Now if you go on the internet, you see that sitting is the new smoking. So, you know, we are trading different risk factors.
Really? So how can we find the proper balance?
Well, that's the question. Again, getting back to my point about moderation, it's about moderation. It's about physical activity and diet. And in the kids in particular, I think one issue is we really overprescribed our kids. Everything is prescribed.
Steve on Perkins. Steven, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, I just had a question. If there were any good studies involving what's called these food, I think they're called food deserts, like where people don't have access to fresh vegetables and things like that.
All right, Steven, thank you. Dr. Kaczmarczyk?
Yeah, certainly, and that comes into the point about food insecurity that I was just talking about, that we have these food deserts within cities, within states, and they're actually associated with higher levels of obesity. So lack of good food, you know, results in higher obesity rates.
Surprising. Well, it's an important topic. It's not going away, and we're going to try to do better, and the Pennington Biomedical Research Center is doing some good things, and let's talk again very soon. It's been a pleasure, Dr. Peter Kaczmarczyk. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
We'll be back after this pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Ali Baltazar is producing, and your number again for Talk Louisiana Everywhere is 877-217-5757, 877-217-5757, and Mark Ballard is our guest. You can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Mark is the Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate, the newspaper of record in Louisiana, and we're going to touch base with him on a few different items. At least two reviews are underway to examine whether Louisiana state government needs to improve its sexual harassment policies as Governor Edwards' administration investigates misconduct accusations against a former top aide. State Senator Sharon Hewitt of Slidell is asking the Louisiana Legislative Auditor's Office to look into this. Mark, what do you think?
Well, I think there does need to be a review. One of the things that's come up as we've been looking into it is that there is no overall state policy for sexual harassment. Each of the agencies have their own policies, but there's nothing that is state government-wide, and that's probably why we're seeing the investigation into the Deputy Chief of Staff, Johnny Anderson, being handled by the Executive Council. Because there's no real procedures of saying this is sexual harassment and this is what we do, this is how you report it, and this is what we do to investigate it. They're just kind of going at it ad hoc right now.
I think it would be naive to assume that only famous media figures like Matt Lauer and Garrison Keillor and Charlie Rose are involved in this type of thing. I think this, based on what we're seeing, Mark, is a pervasive issue. And one that does need to be addressed.
I think it has to be pervasive. I mean, these folks are allegedly using their positions of power to bring in people whom they have power over, usually young females, and bringing a personal issue into the workplace that probably doesn't belong there. Or, no, definitely doesn't belong there, not probably. And I'm willing to bet that there's an awful lot of that that is going on, but I think without the actual structure in government that says this is the way we handle it, that we're never going to really find out. I think a lot of these cases are settled, quietly settled, even before a lawsuit is filed. And it's just hard to kind of track that sort of information down, short of people saying, mm-hmm. you know, this happened to me, and then oftentimes the settlement precludes them from being able to say this happened to me.
Well, on another topic, U.S. Senator John Kennedy is considered to be a swing vote on this nomination to the Fifth Circuit, Kyle Duncan. And yesterday, Kennedy questioned Mr. Duncan. What do you think about John Kennedy, our junior senator, being the point person that apparently the whole country is fixated on how he's going to decide on this particular nomination?
Well, you know, at the risk of agreeing with Senator Kennedy on this and any other issue, is that I believe that that's what the Senate is supposed to advise and consent. What had been going on with Mr. Duncan's nomination has been a sweeping effort by some quarters to have him kind of ordained as the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals judge. And that's fine. They should be able to do that. But the senators that actually make the decision should be questioning his abilities, his philosophical approaches, what he's done in the past. They're supposed to advise and consent. I think in the end that Mr. Duncan is going to be approved, but I think that Senator Kennedy, by not jumping on board prior to the hearing, is doing what he's supposed to do as a senator, in my humble opinion.
877-217-5757. Mary Patricia in Mid-City. Mary Patricia, you're on with Mark Ballard. Hi.
Jim and Mark, you know, I have a lot of respect for both of you. I want to applaud your continued coverage of allegations of sexual assault and other issues going on with women in our community. And I want to encourage both of you to continue to include women's voices in your coverage of these issues as we go forward, because it's really important to a lot of us here in the city, and I appreciate you both.
Thank you, Mary Patricia. And Mark, this is an issue.
It's very difficult for women to speak out on this issue, and that is something that they need encouragement.
Well, it's a case in which it seems like a new person every day who is well known is engulfed in allegations, and in most cases it seems like the allegations have merit. And I don't know when it's going to stop. And for those who thought it would end with Bill O'Reilly or Bill Cosby, this is a new endeavor that we're facing. I don't know when it's going to stop, Mark.
I would be surprised. I mean, I don't think that it's just this top layer. I mean, I think that it goes down, you know, to everyday life. And it's going to have to be a mindset of respect that we just haven't had for a while.
No, not at all. And as Governor John Bel Edwards said last week on his monthly show, a person can appear to be one personality on the air and can be another off the air. And I think we've seen this quite vividly with some of these famous men who have acted inappropriately. And in some cases, you'd have to say, if these allegations are accurate, criminally. But, Mark, what about politicians? Here we've got a candidate for the U.S. Senate in Alabama who's accused of what amounts to a crime, pedophilia. We've had the President of the United States withstand 16 women who made allegations of sexual misconduct against him. It seems as though politicians may not be held to the same standard by the voters that some major companies are holding their employees to.
And I would say that that's correct, but a lot of this is dropping into the partisanship issue, which I'm not sure has a real reason to be there, but it is dropping into that with Judge Moore. It's he's blaming President Obama, he's blaming Hillary Clinton, he's blaming Mitch McConnell, but he's not really, he's calling the people who the women who made these accusations 30 years ago to their friends, and now bringing them up again as lies and trying to pick apart all of these various stories. But that's a political answer, as what Donald Trump's now trying to say. What is the latest I read that he's saying, that even though he apologized for it, and the guy from Access Hollywood got fired for it, that this was all made up, that this somehow was created by the liberal media of some kind, that I would like to see more folks taking responsibility for what they did.
There you go. A story that you worked on this week that has gained a lot of attention is the renaming of several streets at LSU, and one in particular, the street that intersects the Union and Highland Road, Raphael Sims Drive, will have a new name. Raphael Sims was a Confederate war admiral, and some folks don't like the fact that his name is in such a prominent place, and soon they'll have a change.
Yeah, and of course the LSU officials are trying desperately not to make this a Lee Circle type of issue, but they're saying that it's just part of the overall plan. We're changing the highways, we're changing the names of the streets, and trying to put addresses to the various halls and that sort of thing. That's what they're saying. But they're going to be tearing down Kirby Smith Hall, where you lived at one point, and Lockett Hall, where just about anybody who had taken a math class at LSU, it's a much-hated building, and it's going to be taken down as part of the plan. But they are saying that they're not going to, go through and remove Confederate names from buildings and from streets. This Raphael Sims was particularly ironic in that it was the address that had to go onto the African American Cultural Center.
Yeah, isn't that something? Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, a listener notes that there is a Beauregard Hall at LSU and in the Pentagon Barracks area. That one's going to stay, apparently. At least for now.
At least for now. That's not on any of the lists, because remember, LSU is saying, this is all just part of the natural flow as we're updating the campus. But Beauregard is not on those lists, so I assume it's going to stay.
No. Yeah, but Raphael Sims will go, and several other streets. Some are actually being turned into parking lots, Mark.
Oh, yeah, the Dorothea Dix, is it Dorothy Dix?
Yeah.
The columnist that was for the Picayune, which was a paper back in the 1890s before it got kind of subsumed by what is now NOLA.com. had no real connection at all to LSU, but it was a nice little street that went between two parking lots, and now they're just going to say, well, it's all a parking lot now. So the one I liked was the Isaac Klein Street, which also ironically ran near the LSU system office. They're going to change that to Cub Drive or something like that in reflection to U-High.
Right.
But Isaac Klein was the fellow that said, hurricanes are not going to be a problem for Galveston. Don't worry about it. And then a couple of months later, they had the 1900 hurricane.
Yeah. Well, Mark, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today. We'll call next week. And until
All right,
then,
thanks.
Our pleasure. Till then, thanks for listening, everybody. Stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.